Hi, I'm Carmen LaBurge. Thanks for listening to the podcast of Mornings with Carmen LaBurge.
Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting.
Indeed, today is the day. It is Monday, April the 29th. If you are just joining us here on Mornings with Carmen, we are seeking to bring the mind of Christ to bear on the headline news of the day. We are seeking to gain God's perspective on everything that's going on in our lives. And in this hour, we are going to be talking with Dr. Linda Mental. You hear her on the Faith Radio Network in the Dr. Linda Mental Show. She and I are going to be talking about marriage and contempt. We're also going to be talking about contempt in the larger conversations in the culture. And so if you are a person who recognizes that in your own heart of hearts, you actually think there are people out there that are idiots, and you think that there are people who matter less than you matter, and you roll your eyes, and by your tone of voice, you are, you're slaying them. This is actually a conversation for you, even if you are not married. If that is happening in your marriage, this conversation is expressly for you. Later in the hour, I'll be talking with Dr. David Aikman about the headline news around the world, bringing the mind of Christ to bear, and how we as Christians can walk our faith out into the world that God so loves. All that is up next. I want you to consider here as we go to the break, whom have you vowed to love and cherish? What does it mean to love and cherish another person? And if you have taken a vow to love and to cherish, have you loved and have you cherished that other person today? And if we really have a biblical understanding of marriage and the two really have become one flesh, then if you are holding that other person in contempt today, if by the tone of your voice, if by your actions, if by the wall you have now built around your heart against them, what does that say about your love of you? Because if you and that other individual have by God's design become one flesh, then if you're hating them, you're holding yourself in contempt. So we're going to talk about all of that with Dr. Linda Mental up next.
My fight song, take back my life song, prove them all right song.
Joining me now, Dr. Linda Mental. You can check out everything that she is working on at drlindamental.com, and you can hear her live, well, not live, she's recorded, but you can hear her here on the Faith Radio Network. Dr. Linda, welcome back.
Hey, it's great to be with you, and I'm really glad we're talking about this topic, because the focus of my radio show this weekend coming up is going to be on divorce-proofing your marriage. And this is, we're not going to talk directly about contempt, but we're going to talk about the positive things you can do so you don't fall into this. So this is a great lead-in for the week. So we'll get people thinking about it now and understanding what they need to do to really make their relationship strong and healthy and moving forward in a good vein.
Oh, that is excellent. Thank you so much. Let's just start by talking about, why don't you tell us a story? I love drawing people in by telling them a story. So tell us the story of Mike and Jan and what happened when they sat down in your office.
So this is a really typical thing that I see over and over in couples work, and it's not uncommon, unfortunately. So, but let me, before I go into that story, Carmen, let me give you the parameters of what you need to see in a healthy relationship. So when I tell you about Mike and Jan, you'll see what really, how different this is from healthy relationships. So there's a ton of research that says in a good, healthy relationship, really, you could apply this probably to work and to any place in your life. There needs to be, in really happy, good relationships, when you look at people, you notice that there are 20 positives for every negative that happens in that relationship. So it's way loaded over the positive, way over the negative. Then we look at couples who are doing pretty well and are having a pretty decent relationship, and the ratio is 5 to 1. 5 positives for every negative. Now, that's just something we observe. When I'm doing marital work or I'm looking at couples, I will notice, if I actually took and counted, which I've actually done with research in the past, the number of times a couple is positive to each other versus negative. You have to have that 5 to 1 ratio to really make that relationship strong. Now, unhealthy couples, people that are struggling, they're on the road to divorce, they're constantly in conflict, they don't like each other, those couples don't even have a 1 to 1 relationship of positive and negative. So when Mike and Jan came in and it starts off negative right away. And the first thing you notice is one is rolling their eyes, like you mentioned before. They're mocking in their tone. Somebody would say something, the other person would go, "What?" ever, and they would have this sort of disrespect, devaluing, really rejecting kind of attitude to each other. And as soon as you see that, you know, I know as a marital therapist, this is a relationship killer. This is not going to work. And this is one of the problems and why they're working on a very slippery slope toward that road of divorce.
How do we migrate from love, I will love and cherish you. I set aside my concerns for yours. I'm for better, for worse, for sickness and in health, on and on and on. How do we move from that to the place where we've really reached the point of irreconcilability? Because contempt, and well, you and I are going to talk about this, but once you have reached this point of contempt, there really is no road back.
Well, you can work on it. You can work on it with a lot of help. And actually, that is part of what I do with couples, is try to show them here is the road back. There is a road out of this. It takes a lot of work. But we know exactly how you get there. So this is, again, studied stuff. We know what happens. So it begins with a lot of criticism that starts to happen in the relationship. So someone's unhappy, they don't like something, rather than making a complaint, which is okay. You have to sometimes say something that's a problem or something that's a complaint. But complaints are different than constant criticism. And so if you're constantly criticizing your partner or someone that you as a coworker, and you're looking at the negative of what they do, and this a lot of times is because you have different expectations, you disagree with what they're doing, you think you have a better solution to something, and so you begin with this criticism. And then what happens is when you're criticizing in the relationship, it becomes very defensive. And so one person criticizes and the other person feels like they have to defend themselves, and then they criticize the other person, and this bad cycle begins to happen with criticism and defensiveness. Well, if you don't get control of that, it then begins to move into this thing we call contempt, where the criticism and the defensiveness now becomes more intense, more often, more harming, and more damaging. And eventually what happens is a couple ends up in what we call stonewalling, where they literally put up a stone wall and they say, enough of this, I don't want to be with you, and they emotionally get distant from each other. And the number one predictor of divorce is that emotional distance, when you no longer even care what your partner has to say. You're just at the point of thinking, you know what, grass is greener on the other side. There's probably someone out there who really understands me, who gets me, who will agree with me, who will be easier to live with. And that's that slippery road from criticism, defensiveness, to contempt, to stonewalling, that puts couples on the brink of divorce.
So let's talk about one step to take in a positive restorative direction. And then when we come back, we'll wander around more in that subject.
Okay. So the big overarching theme here is that you've got to shift the entire relationship into a much more positive mode. Because when you're in this huge negativity that we're talking about, it doesn't even matter if your partner says something positive, you just devalue it right away because you're in this overall negativity with your partner. They could say something neutral and you would make it negative because you're overarching, you know, feeling about this person. So you have to go back to some very basic building blocks in relationships, where you started when you first fell in love with somebody and what you were doing. There's some very basic things we can talk about after the break that can then begin to build this sound relationship that will be built on changing the whole trajectory of the relationship from negative to positive. And then as you see that, you can see if that's working, because you'll begin to think, you'll begin to see, oh, I'm having more positive statements about my partner than negative. That's sort of the indicator for you as you're moving forward. So the trick is going to be to change the whole relationship into a much more positive arch.
All right. If you are in a relationship where you know there is contempt, or if you are in relationship with a couple or coworkers who have contempt for one another, this is really an essential conversation in terms of the restoration of not just civility, but real genuine love in our families and in our culture. And so Dr. Linda Mental has more help on this subject when we come back.
Hear the bells ringing, they're singing that you can be born again.
So we've actually been talking a fair amount here on Mornings with Carmen about marriage. I remember a conversation that we had with Tim Muehlhoff about his book about spiritual warfare in your marriage. We've talked with Chip Ingram about marriage. We have talked recently with Chris Corsi about having a joy-filled marriage. Today, we're talking down really two trajectories. One is what Dr. Linda Mental is going to be talking about on her Saturday program here on the Faith Radio Network, how to divorce-proof your marriage. And today is sort of the lead-in into that, which is a conversation about contempt and what happens when you recognize that you have reached the point where there is contempt in your marriage or contempt in another relationship. And so let's talk about how we lose contempt and replace it with respect. What are some steps along that path?
So you have to start, Carmen, with just a basic humility that gets lost in this process. You know, you are not better than anybody else. You do not have the edge over something. You're not smarter, better. Maybe you are a little bit smarter, but you don't certainly approach things with people as if you are more superior. That's just not a Christian principle. We're supposed to do all things from a humble position. And then the other variable that's really important is to get in touch with some empathy. So putting yourself in the shoes of your partner and wondering what it might feel like to be talked to that way, to be the recipient of a really awful tone of voice or rolling eyes. Nobody likes that when they're in that position and they're the recipient. So I think humility and empathy are two really important skills to really begin to work on. But as you do that, and if you agree, you know, we want to get rid of this. I want to get rid of this in my relationship with anybody. I'm going to lose contempt, because it isn't a Christian characteristic that any of us should have. You begin by really going back to that very basic friendship. Why did I like this person to begin with? What was it that I saw in that person? And you do what we often do when we work with parents who are having trouble feeling good about their kids because their kids are acting out all the time. And that is, we catch them being good. So we always tell parents when we're doing parent training, look for the positive in your child. Find when they're doing something that you really like and verbalize it to the child. The more you verbalize praise, fondness, admiration for your child or your partner, the more positive that you're going to begin to feel about that person. So verbalizing that appreciation, that fondness, that admiration, when you do that, it's forcing you to focus on those things that you see in that person that are positive rather than those negative things. So that begins to turn it around. And then the other really important part of this is you have to learn to manage conflict with that person. And, you know, I wrote a whole book on this. We need to talk. It's all about managing conflict. But conflict is such an important skill in any relationship, because people disagree, because they come from very different families and they're coming together with very different ideas and opinions and the way that they do things and expectations. So the idea here is, when you have a conflict, you begin with what we call a soft startup. In other words, you don't just lash out at that person and start telling them what they're doing wrong. You do it more gently. You start with, you know, here's something that I've been noticing. Here's something that I think we need to talk about. It would be great if we could have a conversation. That's a whole different startup point than just telling someone, you know, you're just really an idiot. How many times do I have to tell you not to put your, you know, shoes by the door? Whatever it is. So starting soft and then beginning to work through accepting the influence of the other people. So one of the really interesting things about husbands is that the more they accept their wife's influence, the better the relationship goes. And I think that's because it's a respect thing. It's something that you're saying, this person has something to offer in the relationship, and I can certainly listen to the person and try to work things out. So managing conflict, if you can get re-in-touch, if you can touch base again with your friendship, why you were with that person, understanding the things that they like and things that you could do together, if you then begin to express fondness and admiration, and you turn towards that person when you have a problem rather than turning away from the person and looking to other people to listen to you, that's another really important thing to do. And then you manage conflict well. That whole arc of the relationship is then going to change from negative to positive, and you'll start to have a much better and a much healthier relationship that will prevent you going down that road to divorce.
So how many times, Linda, have we heard people negatively say to the other person, you're just not the person I married?
Yeah, it's such a lie. Yeah.
Well, it is and it isn't. So my husband and I have this little tradition now where we acknowledge positively. I mean, you know, we're our eighth anniversary is this next week, and we very, very positively acknowledge that we are not the people we were 8 years ago. I am a better person because of Jim's influence in my life over the last 9 years. I'm a better Christian. I'm a better stepmom. I'm hopefully a better wife than I was when we started this out. And he would say the same things. And so we have this tradition on our anniversary of like very joyfully chronicling to one another the positive things, the positive spiritual growth, the positive sort of atmospheric things in our home or in our life that are different than they were a year ago or 5 years ago or now 8 years ago, like the positive ways in which we are not the people who we married.
So what you're doing is you're just talking about the growth and the change that should mm-hmm. happen in a relationship in a positive way. And it's one of the reasons that God kept telling the children of Israel, remember what I did. Because remember, that group was pretty complaining in the Old Testament. They were always complaining and complaining. And God had to keep saying, you know, to them, try to remember. Moses would say, remember the things that God has done, how he's taken you out. So in any relationship, if you can continue to grow together and continue to work on things together, again, not turning out of the relationship to other people and other influences and all that. But a lie that often comes into our head, Carmen, is this idea, there's somebody better for me, or, you know, somebody else would understand me better. And I really do believe from, you know, doing this for 25 years, that if you even allow that idea to seed a little bit in your relationship, it's going to grow into something that's going to be problematic. Because the minute you start to doubt that you are with the person that God chose for you, that you made a covenant with that person, and you begin to think, maybe there's somebody out there better for me. And then you start to get frustrated and angry with things that they do and then start to devalue them. That seed of maybe there's somebody better rather than what can I do in my life to be a better person, to be a better partner, to be deeper in my intimacy with God? How can I grow with my partner and we can move forward and make this relationship even better through the years? Those are two very different mindsets. So that mindset of I wonder if it's better with somebody else just needs to be stopped. You need to take that thought captive and you need to confine it and say, no, I'm not going to allow myself to think that way.
So Linda's got a great piece posted on this at drlindamental.com. She's going to be talking about this on the Dr. Linda Mental Show this weekend here on the Faith Radio Network. Thank you so much for sharing your insights on this subject with us today. Thanks so much, Dr. Linda.
Good to be with you. Talk to you soon.
Oh, it's great to have you. Likewise. All right, friends, I got to take a quick break and then we'll be back.
So how are you affecting the atmosphere today? So we walk out into the world that God so loves. We drive out into the world that God so loves. We influence everyone around us. And so you are changing the atmospheric conditions. Your personal level of pressure, like we think about the barometric pressure around us, but the pressure that you are under and maybe the pressure that you are feeling, let me just tell you, that is affecting others around you. Some people call it like emotional contagion. I call it the Jesus stink, because the reality is the Jesus people are influencing the atmosphere around us, and we are supposed to be representing Christ to the world. People should feel Christ moving into the room when we arrive. People should feel as if Jesus Christ has come into the chaos that they are experiencing because the Christians are present. And if that's not what people are experiencing, if frankly you're just adding to the chaos, if frankly you're just adding to the pressure and the tension and the cacophony of noise, and then you know you are not representing Christ in a way that is consistent with who he really is. And so while it's true that those of us who represent Christ are the aroma of death to those who are perishing, we're also the aroma of life to those who are really seeking wholeness and peace and seeking to know who God is. And so go out there with your Jesus stink today and represent Christ in every environment in a way that actually brings love and healing and hope and redemption to bear on the very real trials and traumas that people are experiencing today. When we come back, I'm going to be talking with Dr. David Aikman about the big headline news around the world. He's going to help us understand what's happening and how we can influence it. This is Mornings with Carmen. I'm Carmen LaBerge.
Can you remember the last time you had a meaningful conversation with your teen? Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. Hey, teens aren't exactly the easiest people to talk to. Sometimes getting even two or three words out of them is a rare feat. So if you can use some help, here's some basic do's and don'ts for connecting one-on-one with your teen. Do ask a thoughtful question. Do spend more time listening than talking. Do give them your full, undivided attention. However, don't turn your conversation into a lecture. And don't shut down their response with critical words or body language. Starting a conversation with your teen won't always be easy, but with smart techniques and a humble heart, you can make a meaningful connection.
Parenting Teens isn't for the faint of heart. Want more help from Mark Gregston? Check out his latest resources online at parentingtodaysteens.org.
My name is Bond, James Bond.
Dr. David Aikman, editor of Godspeed Magazine, joins us every Monday. Sir, welcome back.
Hi, David. Carmen. How are you?
Hello. I'm well. All right. So good, I would like good. To start with North Korea and Russia, and then I would like to talk about Northern Ireland. So last Thursday, just to bring folks up to speed, Russia's President Vladimir Putin met with North Korea's leader Kim Jong-un. Tell us what happened in that meeting and why it matters.
Well, it's an important meeting because Kim Jong-un wanted Russia to give him an escape hatch from a relationship with Donald Trump that wasn't apparently leading anywhere that he wanted. And so Putin, obviously happy to be sought as a sort of mediator in this difficult issue, gave him twice as long as he'd originally been scheduled for, and really laid out the red carpet for Kim. Had marching bands and a bread and salt hospitality ceremony that's very dear to the Russians. So they really honored him, and I don't think they agreed on anything substantial, except that Putin agreed to support Kim Jong-un's desire to return to the six-nation talks that had been conducted between Korea and the United States with China and Japan and Russia joining in, which the U.S. doesn't want to do. But I think Kim thought that this is the alternative to living with a dialogue with America that's going south.
So for folks who maybe are not paying attention to, I don't know, can I call them bad actors? You know, I don't see how a strengthening friendship and alliance between North Korea and Russia, I don't see how that is a positive step forward for the world. However, I recognize that if it gets us back to a negotiating table in terms of peace on the Korean Peninsula and ultimately the denuclearization of North Korea, you know, then I view it as positive. So, you know, sort of help me sort through those things.
Well, that's right. I mean, Putin obviously doesn't want North Korea to have nuclear weapons any more than the United States does. But he is willing to be a sort of consoler to Kim, who is very upset that the Americans have not relaxed their sanctions on the country because they claim that Kim's strategy or timetable for denuclearizing is not working. And so Putin is a sort of safety valve for Kim, but I don't think it's going to add anything to the overall equation, because the six-party talks have been a consistent failure in the past, and I don't think reviving them now is going to make any difference.
Okay, let's shift our attention to Northern Ireland. There's so much I want to cover with you today, so I might move quickly through these topics. But for folks who do not know what's happening in Northern Ireland, tell us about the death of this young journalist, and then tell us sort of the larger picture that that's a part of.
Well, the journalist was shot by an unknown gunman who apparently was part of an organization called the New IRA, a dissenting Irish nationalist group, who were resisting a police raid on a particular housing estate, which has been a hotbed of Republican activism against the police of the British Northern Ireland territory. And she was shot dead. And at the funeral, one of the priests said, "In God's name, why does it take the death of a young woman of 29 in order to get us back to the negotiating table?" Now, what he was concerned about, and what many people have been concerned about, is that the peace agreement that ended the troubles in Northern Ireland, as they're called, the Good Friday Agreement of 1999, has been sort of really troubled by the fact that the two constituent sides, the Protestant UDP and the Sinn Féin representing the Irish, have fallen out and they haven't been able to conduct a dual administration that they were supposed to do. And the fear is that if Brexit crumbles, as it seems to be doing at this point, and if a hard border is established between Northern Ireland and the Irish Republic, that will lead to a resumption of the sectarian strife that absolutely tore the life out of Northern Ireland for 20 years and only ended with the Good Friday Agreement. So a lot of people are very worried about the situation in Northern Ireland at this point.
So, David, you and I need to take a quick break. When we come back, I'd love your quick take on Spain. I know they held their third election since 2015 over the weekend, which that's just mind-boggling for those of us in America to even imagine. But then I want to talk about this sort of broader topic of global economic confusion. So that's up next here with David Aikman.
on Mornings with Carmen.
Christ is risen from the dead, trampling over death by death. Come awake, come awake, come and rise up from the grave.
Indeed, Christ is risen from the dead. That does change everything, and we are seeking to bring that perspective to bear on the global news with David Aikman. Dr. Aikman, let me just get your hot take on Spain.
Okay, well, the Spanish situation has really been spiraling downhill ever since Catalan began to develop these nationalist demonstrations and actually voted for seceding from Spain a year ago. And the Spanish have been very angry about this. And the current elections featured an ultra-nationalist right-wing group called the Vox Party that sounded as though it was a playback to the days of Francisco Franco, the Spanish dictator who died many years ago. But they don't want to see, Spaniards don't want to see Spain return to the far right of fascism, but they are very angry with this separation move by the Catalan government and population. So they voted for the socialists, thinking that the socialists would have a better plan to bring Catalan back into line as part of Spain. But the socialists have a real problem because they've got to find somebody who's going to vote with them in the parliament, and that's not at all clear.
Okay, so when we talk about unrest and we talk about the way that our economy is intimately connected to every other economy around the globe, we might not want to be globalists, but we are when it comes to economic realities. Give us a sense of what you see happening globally in terms of what I'm just going to describe as economic confusion.
Yes, well, it is, because one of the big players in the global economic scene, in fact, potentially the biggest, China, is going through a significant slowdown in economic growth and has been going that way for about 6 months. Now, if China's economy slows drastically, that is going to affect trade all over the world, not just in the United States, but also in Europe. And China is also wooing Britain after Britain's confusion about getting out of the EU. And so, for example, one of the issues that's come up in Great Britain has been whether or not to do a 5G trade deal with China and have Huawei, the China telecom giant, be the agent for it. Now, many countries, particularly the United States, Australia, and New Zealand, have been adamantly against this because they think that Huawei, with its close ties to the Chinese Communist Party, is potentially a security risk in any deal that it does. So you've got a lot of confusion, partly over security issues, partly over the uncertainty of how the economy in different places, particularly China, is going to develop.
And then I think we would probably add into the mix of that conversation, instability. And anytime that there is instability in terms of predictability, like economic markets like predictability. And so I just think that that's something for people to keep an eye on. Let's talk about China and what is described as Belt and Road. Tell people what Belt and Road is and what's going on in terms of Africa.
Well, the China Belt and Road Initiative is a multi-billion dollar, in fact, a trillion dollar plan by the Chinese government to build infrastructure connections in different parts of the world, ranging from Africa, Europe, to South America, so that Chinese trade can expand in a secure network, and that countries that are brought into this whole Belt and Road network by China will actually benefit with the infrastructure construction. But there's been a lot of kickback from several countries, because what the Chinese tend to do is they set up a trade deal with a certain country, let's say Sri Lanka, which is an obvious recent example, and the Sri Lankans can't pay off the debt that they incurred by borrowing money from China. And so the Chinese say, don't worry, we'll just take control of two of your large seagoing ports so we can get our money back from that. And so part of the confusion about Belt and Road is it does indeed build up a country's infrastructure, but the danger of being engulfed in massive debt to the People's Republic of China has created a large backlash against the whole project. And I don't know quite how successful it's going to be in the future.
So, David, I was in Malawi 10 years ago. China was very, very present, and they were building infrastructure. They were building up the nation's infrastructure. And in exchange, all they were asking for were, you know, the rights to that which was under the ground, which nobody could see nor get at anyway.
Right.
And so the mineral rights, the rights to oil reserves that might be there, it's an interesting conversation to have. The power and that we give up in terms of the future when we trade away that which we currently cannot see and currently cannot access because of an infrastructure weakness in a particular country. So I do think that it's important for Westerners to be mindful that China is playing a long game, and this Belt and Road plan to build infrastructure and to build goodwill around the world is a very, very effective way to, be a major influence in the future.
Well, yes, China wants to replace the United States as a preeminent global superpower by the year 2050. It's a very important book that came out by Michael Pillsbury called The 100-Year Marathon, actually describing how China is setting about doing this. And I think the rest of the world is completely unaware of the fact that China doesn't just want to become a big economic player. It wants to become the big player in economics and politics all over the world.
Often too short-sighted. David Aikman, thank you so much for helping us be mindful of what's going on globally. We look forward to talking with you again.
And thank you for having me on. I always enjoy it.
Such a pleasure. All right, friends, we've got to take a quick break, and then we will wrap it up here on Mornings with Carmen. So here's one final story for you to consider today as you head out there into the world. Remember those really horrific forest fires in California last year? Well, they were sparked by power lines. And that company has filed for bankruptcy because of all of the lawsuits filed against them. And so what they have decided to do is they now have what we're describing as, or the media is describing as, a radical plan to prevent wildfires by simply shutting down the power grid when there are high winds, because there's no way the power company can, prevent trees from falling on their lines or other things snapping their lines. And therefore, in order to prevent future fires, they're simply going to shut down the entire power grid for as long as 5 days. So be careful what you ask for in terms of prevention of things, because you may end up preventing something upon which you depend. These are good conversations for us to have as Christians in the culture today. Where are people putting their faith? Upon what are they depending? And how sure and certain are those sources of power? I don't know about you, but I am plugged in today to the power of the Holy Spirit. I am letting the Spirit of the living God animate my life. I would invite you to do the same and go out there into the world that God so loves as an agent of His grace. Have a great day, and God bless.
Thanks for listening to this podcast of Mornings with Carmen LaBurge from Faith Radio. If you haven't, you can subscribe to automatically receive the podcast through iTunes or the Google Play Music app. That way, you never miss an episode. It's also available anytime at myfaithradio.com.